It's football at four. Here's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
Cecil Lammy sitting in for D-Mac today, and we actually will hear from Joe Flacco a little bit later on in the show. So he must be lifting or something, Tommy.
Treatment.
A little treatment, a little
get
lift.
Some ice.
A little extra practice. And, well, maybe a spot on the bench eventually, according to Jason Lockenfora, CBS Sports. He listed some teams that will make quarterback changes during the season. Are you surprised that the Broncos made his list?
Yes. In 2019, yes.
Okay. Now, Lockenfora, full disclosure, he's over there around Baltimore in D.C., covers the Ravens, covers the Redskins, covers the entire NFL, but he's fairly close to the Ravens.
Does that mean he knows Joe Flacco's game that well, or does he have an axe to grind?
He might have an axe to grind, or might have people in that building that are telling him things. When it's Lockenfora, usually go, okay, I'm probably not going to believe it. But when it's Lockenfora on the Redskins or the Ravens, you go, huh. Okay, he's pretty close to those two teams. Rest of the league, whatever. But does the report, do you even pay attention?
I saw the report.
If it's the reporter, like a reporter that's close to a certain team, does matter at all?
A beat writer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A beat writer speaking about players, current or former, that they covered. That's why the Casey Joyner, I reference that all the time. That's a guy that knows nothing about the Denver Broncos. Nothing. Because he's not local. The local guys know. They got dirt. They have sources. It's much, I take that, you know, I give more weight to it, I guess I should say.
Okay. Well, tell me if this sounds like someone with an axe to grind. This is a quote from Jason Lockenfora's article. Joe Flacco has not been very good since he won the Super Bowl. In the last four injury-riddled seasons, I thought it was two, anyway, you could make a case he was the most overpaid player in the league. No one has thrown more road interceptions. No full-time starter has fewer yards per attempt. And his QB rating has been Bortles-esque. After being impervious to injury and never missing a start most of his career, he has battled significant injuries three straight years. And Denver's OL has been PU for a long time. Even with a great defense and run game, Denver will be hard-pressed to stay viable in a brutal AFC West. And at some point, John Elway is going to want to see Drew Lock fling it around in real games after gushing over him in months of practices. Here's Joe
Let's
Flacco.
Hear Joe Flacco
at
right
the
now.
Podium.
How would you assess the progress in terms of pumping over the offense over the last month?
Yeah, I think it's been going really good. I think we've talked about it in the past, but you know, Vic's defense and the progressions that they've made and the amount of stuff they have in, I think it tests you every day. So you go out there and you make some mistakes, but you know, I think we've been able to learn from a lot of them. The other thing I think Vic does a good job of is situational football. I think we've practiced a ton of situations. You know, we've already been in the red zone 2 minute and not just one or two times. Like, we've been doing a lot of it. So I think the fact that we've been able to do a lot of that stuff has kind of made the learning curve, you know, a little bit quicker for guys, and guys have adapted well to it.
When Hayden was here last week visiting, he said that, you know, when he worked with Vic, they wanted to win every day, and that helped him become better.
There's no doubt. You can see it, man. I mean, I think a couple weeks ago, like, we did a little situation, and I threw a touchdown pass to Tim in the back of the end zone, and, like, the period was supposed to be over. It's supposed to be the twos, and, like, Vic's like, all right, run it back. You know, and it's like, all right, we'll try to win it. I guess we'll beat you again, you know. But, no, you can tell. You know, he's a head coach, but he's got that. He's obviously got that fire to be that, you know, great defensive play caller and get that defense where he wants it to be, and he wants to win every single day, every single play.
Do you have to remind him, like, hey, you're the head coach of the offense, too. This is good.
Hey, to be honest with you, hey, you know, I think it's a good thing. It creates that competition every day in practice. I think it also says and shows, it really shows just how much trust he has in our offensive staff, that he's able to, you know, really focus on what he's doing and the competition of things and let those guys go to work with us and really get us right.
You said it was important for you to kind of prove to these guys that you were still the man. Do you no longer feel like the new guy? Do you feel, because they've been praising you to us, but we're not really kind of inside the walls. Does it feel different now?
I tell you what, man, I figured it would take a week or two to really feel like a part of the team in terms of, you know, not necessarily on the football field. I think that stuff comes a little bit more naturally. You know, when you're on the football field, you just start playing football and it comes. And But building relationships with these guys and, you know, off the field and stuff like that, I think this is a great team. I think we've got a great group of guys. And, you know, I think it's really a credit to them how comfortable I've felt, you know, really since I've walked in the building. So I feel great. And it's just, you know, oiling the thing up on the field and getting things going. But I think we got a great group of talented guys that want to win and want to work hard to do it. So
in years past, you have Bob Miller breathing down your back on the field or watching tape on him or whatever. What respect or what new have you learned about
him? I've been around a lot of good guys on defense for most of my career, man. I mean, you guys know Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Terrell Suggs. I mean, just to name a couple. I mean, there's plenty more. I mean, and he's another one of those guys. He is special. And we have a couple guys on our defense. It's not just him. But the things that he can do to get around the edge, and then I think some of the things that Vic's going to have him doing in the defense, it's really impressive what he can do, how he's built. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about him because I don't want to come off as just like Mr. Von Miller pump hype man. But the
that's okay. That's
what he, no, no, he's just, you know, and then to his credit, too, just the way he, you know, you never know how guys are going to be in the locker room with their teammates and stuff like that when they are such big stars like he is. But I mean, he seems just like an awesome teammate, great guy. Comes out and works and gets after his business, so it's nice to see.
Has the pace of learning been excelled? You talked about already in the 2-minute offense. So has the pace of learning been accelerated too?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think I'm used to doing a lot of those situations early, but being in a new offense with new guys and everybody's really learning a new offense. It's not just me, it's everybody. I really do think it helps us out so much. It gets us thinking. If you don't get in your book and come out here and you aren't ready to go, it's going to leave you behind. And I think that it's really able to show the fact that we have a bunch of guys that's not going to happen to. So it's a good thing. And yeah, I think Vic's really wants to push us. I mean, shoot, we've been running 80 to 90 plays out there and getting it in a quick time frame during OTAs. I think that's just a grind. I think it's a good thing mentally to go out there and be able to, you know, stay focused for that many plays throughout a single practice. There's a lot of things that I think mentally they've put us through in the last couple weeks, and I think we're reacting pretty good to it.
Joe, don't take this the wrong way, but your receiver group was pretty young compared to you.
How do you, man?
I mean, they're all their first or second.
No, it's true. It's funny.
How do you relate and spend that time with?
I honestly think it's funny. I just don't think I'm 34. I think I forget. I think I'm 23 too. And it really does happen. Like, I'll be sitting in there, and you know, we're just shooting the breeze in the locker room, in the cafeteria, and whatever. And you really do forget, oh my God, like, these guys are 10 years younger than I am, at least some of them, you know? And it's just, it doesn't really dawn on me. I really don't see it that way. I mean, everybody wants to talk about age and things like that, but in this sport, it really doesn't matter that much. It's just about going out there and performing. And being in an NFL locker room, you never grow up. I don't care what age group. I don't care how old you are. 34 is not really that old. I mean, I know it's old in this sport, but you don't grow up. I plan on being a kid the rest of my life. I mean, that's why I have a couple kids of my own, and I'm able to. I got to be dad, but it's nice to, you know, it's nice to be the dad because you can be their friend and be the kid a little bit. And in this locker room, you have no choice. It's an awesome work atmosphere, and that's why we're the luckiest people in the world.
How was CC and Peyton and catching up with him?
It's cool, you know. I don't really know Peyton that well, so it's still cool for me. He's still a guy that I grew up watching playing, and like, now I'm on the same football field as him. And yeah, so I really don't lose sight of that. Shoot, it's Peyton Manning. I'm still watching him do nationwide commercials or whatever he's doing, just like you guys are, and sitting there laughing. So anytime I get a chance to talk with him and do those kind of things, it's pretty neat.
Did you offer any helpful advice about the transition of football or anything?
No, we didn't get a chance to talk too much. It was more just casual.
We've seen you throw the ball pretty deep a few times out here. How far can you comfortably throw the ball?
I have no idea. I hope I don't have to throw the ball too far. You know, you want to get the ball out and get it in rhythm. So hopefully 50 yards downfield, we won't push it down much further than that. But I would think that the air up here, you actually can get a few more yards further here. I mean, I have no idea how far I can throw a ball up here. I haven't really tried, and I don't really plan on going out there and trying to do it. So that gets pumped up, man. You go back and look at that throw. It was only like 50 yards. It could have been. It could have been more. I keep telling you, Jacoby didn't think the ball was coming to him. I was getting ready to wind up and fire, and next thing you know, I had to kind of take some off. I don't think I threw the ball that far there, but hey, whatever you want to say. It sounds good, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How comfortable would you be? What yard line would you say you had to be at for him to get in the end zone?
Oh, like a Hail Mary?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we're on the opposite 30-yard line, I would think I could pretty comfortably get in the end zone, but I have no idea. I hope so. I might try to overthrow it and throw a duck, and it might only get to the 20. I don't know.
Joe, a few more for Joe.
Vic said you've had a real good offseason, but do you think you've had a good one, and are you surprised that it went as well as you did?
Well, I'm not surprised about anything. I think it's been a lot of fun. I think there's been a lot of good, and I think there's been a lot of learning experiences. That's the beauty, like I talked about earlier, going against such a good defense, at the same time learning an offense, learning new guys. So, yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of room for improvement. It was a good start. We set a good foundation, but I'm really looking forward to, you know, improving and really getting going during training camp.
The other guys you connected with a little bit today was Jeff Hierman. Is that because of what the defense was doing, or are you building a rapport with him?
Yeah, I mean, everything's really, you got a progression, and you got the defense determining maybe a little bit of part, a couple parts of that. And, you know, Jeff's one of those guys that probably doesn't get a ton of chances in the pass game, but when he does, he's in the right spots. He gets there in the timing of the play, and he knows where to be and how to sit down and when to keep going. So it's a credit to him that he probably doesn't have a ton of chances, but when he does, he makes the most of it.
Joe, we talked to you about your family standing back through the spring, and that'll give you a chance to really get to know your teammates. Has it worked out the way?
Yeah, I think it's been huge, man. I don't know if my wife feels the same way, but it really is. I think you got a good group of guys in this team that they like to put stuff together, get out and do stuff together. You know, just trying to find guys that, you know, are capable of going out to dinner and things like that. And then, you know, I don't have anywhere to be after this, so we hang out in here at lunch for a couple hours, just, you know, doing whatever. We all show up here early in the morning eating breakfast just so we can kind of hang out at the table and do that thing. I think it's really important. I think, you know, and I think getting with everybody in the locker room, I think that's really important, especially as a quarterback, to, you know, to show them that, you know, you're just one of the guys.
Joe, some of your teammates have said on your side of the ball that you're kind of several steps ahead of the rest of the guys. Do you feel the same way in terms of knowing the playbook, understanding where everybody needs to be? A couple of guys on your side of the ball have said that.
They're just saying that. I think they probably because they feel like they have to. You know, I feel like I can, you know, go into a quarterback room and really get on the board or whatever it is and take the offense and go out in the field and translate that to running it. I think I have a good, you know, grasp on things, but you still gotta, you know, it's always improving and getting faster and making sure your feet are in the right spot. And that's why I like this offense so much, because so much is tied into where your eyes are and how your feet are. And I think that Rich does a good job teaching it and makes it easy for us as quarterbacks to really go out there and make that happen. You know, like when we're an individual and stuff like that, he's constantly talking to us about, you know, the timing of some of the routes that we're throwing. And he's constantly looking at our feet, making sure that we have them in the ground, have a good base. And I think as long as, like, you start with those fundamentals, a lot of the reads in this offense, you know, you start to get used to them, and your eyes and your feet are all tied into it. And, you know, so if you can get that individual period down, you know, all the other stuff kind of comes. And I think that, you know, I think that really all the guys are starting to do a good job of that.
Thank you very much, Joe.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Joe. There's Joe Flacco, Broncos quarterback out at UCL Training Center with some good questions. I thought James had a good question. Some awful questions for Joe Flacco. And we respond to his answers and why it may take some more time before it feels like his team. We'll get to that next.
The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
Cecil Lammy sitting in for D-Mac today. And, well, we never got to finish the whole Jason Lockenfora thinks the Broncos are going to change their quarterback thing. We just heard from Joe Flacco. Some really good answers from Joe Flacco on some really bad questions, some of them. But let's do the Lockenfora thing first before we, you know, kind of react to Joe Flacco's press conference today. It sounds like someone has an axe to grind. it doesn't seem like the Broncos will be making this quarterback change, especially because I've been out there for a month straight, every week, watching full practices, and Drew Lock is not ready. Now, that doesn't mean in November he wouldn't be ready, but Drew Lock is still third string. We still see Kevin Hogan with the second team. And Drew Lock, although he's making improvements slowly, as Vic Fangio said, and went out of his way to praise him, Drew Lock's not ready.
Yeah, but Luck and Four doesn't know that. He knows what he knows of Joe Flacco and his time in Baltimore. I will point out, and this is where I think he does have an axe to grind, because he said he hasn't been good since the Super Bowl, which was 2012. Then he went on to bash the last 4 years, but he's missing a void in there of a couple years.
Right.
He's missing 13 and 14. 14 was the year he had Gary Kubiak as his offensive coordinator,
which was the best year of his career, statistically.
Right. So he kind of glossed over that, saying he hasn't been good, and then bashed the 4 years due to injuries.
And then said it was 3 years that he was injured, like it was all over the place.
Right. Man, I don't know what they think of Joe Flacco in Baltimore. All I care about is Joe Flacco in Denver. And you can discount how poorly he played or well he played. And it's funny, he talks about injuries, and that's a reason why players don't have great years, because they're playing hurt or they're dealing with injuries on a week in, week out basis. Week in, week out. So I'm not sure if he's trying to make a case of Joe Flacco wasn't great at the end because he was injured, or Joe Flacco is just not a good quarterback and has been. See, the overpaid part, every team, every sport has that. And, you know, you could go locally for every team and say that. If people think Paul Millsap for the Nuggets making 30 a year is overpaid, Who cares in the end?
I mean, I could make an argument that Joe Flacco was underpaid at $18 million a year.
Getting 18 this year, which is the same that Case Keenum is due to make this year. I don't think he's going to make that, but that's the going rate, and that's the deal he signed last year. 2 years, $36 million is what Joe Flacco was making this year, $18 million.
Yeah.
So it's. I don't know what his point is to kind of trash Joe Flacco on the way out. Maybe they did not have a good relationship, but if you listen to the press conference he just gave, I cannot think of a reason why, if those are the type of answers that he was giving in Baltimore throughout his career there, I don't know why he'd have an axe to grind.
He never changed teams in 15 years. So when a guy changes a team like the way Joe Flacco did, you're going to get some. Verbally, you're going to keep saying, like, you guys. He keeps saying that. When does it feel like his team? When do you think he'll be like, we have a great football team?
Oh, I think he did. I think he mentioned that in his comments. He goes, I think we have a great football team here. I think you guys, he's not referring to the media.
I'm not sure. It just seems like he's talking about the Broncos as an outsider instead of their starting quarterback.
Right. I would assume that if I didn't catch that, but
said it a couple of times.
I thought the only thing that really caught my ears were the comments he kept calling Vic's defense. He kept saying Vic's defense. So he's allowing, and part of what he was trying to explain is that Vic Fangio is allowing the offensive coaches to coach the offense, and he's with the defense. I was under the impression that it was Ed Donatell's defense. But make no mistake, it's Vic Fangio coaching the defense.
How's that feel if they have to rerun a play when the offense scores a touchdown, like Flacco explained? He threw a touchdown to Tim Patrick in the back of the end zone, and Vic is like, good, run it again.
Right.
How's that feel if you're the offense?
I think it feels good because you made the head coach, who's a defensive coordinator, mad enough at his defense that you get to do it again. That's good. That's a good thing.
You're not mad because you did your job and now you got to do it again?
No, because you know the next play you're going to fail, but you got the job done. You got to win some battles in practice. And he was talking about mistakes and learning from them. There are mistakes being made both sides of the ball every play. The good thing is that he's acknowledging them and they're learning from them.
Joe Flacco has a favorite target, by the way. Do you know who it is?
It's not Tim Patrick. It's not Cortland Sutton. Juwan Winfrey.
No.
Noah Fant.
No. This goes into the
Troy Fumagalli.
This goes into the Jeff Heuermann question. Joe Flacco's favorite guy is the open guy.
Okay.
Now there
that was a trick question.
Yes, it was.
I was going through the roster.
You're going to you made it to Juwan Winfrey.
I thought I was going dark horse.
Sleeper candidate.
Yeah.
Emerging at minicamp.
Yeah. No. Breaking news.
Right. Juwan Winfrey.
He's going to have 100 catches this year. Sixth round pick. That's why they gave the seventh round pick to move up and get him.
You move up in the sixth round for a reason, am I right, fellas? I mean, well, yeah. they moved up for you, right?
No, they moved back for me. There was no one left. Who's left?
They moved back?
Yeah.
Yeah, if we get him,
I was the third of the breadsticks in the seventh round. I was the third seventh round pick.
How did that feel?
Not great at that point. Not the fact that I was one of three seventh round picks, but just that I was a seventh round pick at all.
Okay. Who are the other two seventh round picks?
Butler Binotti, okay. A corner out of Ohio State, and Keith Burns.
Very good.
Pretty damn good pick.
Okay. Binotti played a little bit, if memory serves.
Rookie year, maybe, but he didn't last long.
Kind of washed out a little bit.
Yeah.
Did he try playing running back, or was he a converted running back? My memory is fading.
I don't remember. Butler, he was a corner here.
Yeah, but I think he might have played running back in college.
A lot of he had a lot of, not commas, what's the high one? The mark, Butler
Binotti.
Yeah.
The little quotation apostrophe, mark, apostrophe but, thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not an umlaut. That's like Motley Crue has the two dots.
This is apostrophes.
Apostrophe.
Yeah.
There you go.
There's many of them.
And Butler Binotti.
Binotti.
Okay. Binotti. Well, Joe Flacco in his press conference also talking about, and my point about the favorite target is his favorite target is the open guy. Because the Jeff Heuermann thing, like, I could have said that about Austin Fort today. I could have said that about Troy Fumagalli today. And last week it was Troy Fumagalli, like lots of Troy Fumagalli.
You were loving on him last week.
Yeah, today it was like...
That's Austin Fort day.
Who's open? That's Joe Flacco's favorite guy. He's not leaning... Now, I will say, I don't think I'm giving too much away, Cortland Sutton gets a lot of plays designed for him. Let's just say that.
Right.
So when at the end of the day, the stat sheet will show Cortland Sutton get a lot of catches. But who's Joe Flacco's favorite target? The open guy.
Because that's a veteran quarterback type thing. Because, yeah, your primary receiver on a lot of passing plays will be either Emmanuel Sanders, provided he's healthy, or Cortland Sutton. And maybe Noah Fant or a tight end. But when you're a veteran quarterback, that's not always feasible to throw to those guys because they're covered or the coverages. So he's scanning the field looking for second, third, fourth options. And that's what you get out of the veteran guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Drew Lock would even know if his third option was open or not, because he's not going to get there right now.
He's going to run.
At this point.
And he's going to run.
No.
Because he can run.
My first and second read are covered. I'm taking off.
Isn't that a good way, though? Like, don't force him to stay in the pocket. Like, let his instincts take over. If you're coaching Drew Lock, don't you say, read high, read low, and then take off and run?
To simplify it, yeah. But you'd like to get him to the point where, first, second, third option are covered. Fourth is I'm better off there than running. And that's what he needs to get to. Well, that takes a while.
He's not even getting second team reps.
Yeah, but he's still getting to scan the field and look at his first, second, third. It's the same thing. It's just you're playing against different talent, but he's also throwing to different talent as well.
Yes, because you're Brendan Langley.
It's like
Langley's.
The guys he's throwing to are more like the Missouri receivers that he threw to in college, whereas Joe Flacco's throwing with the Alabama receivers or whoever in the SEC.
Right.
But he's still going through reads and he's still getting coached up when he goes back to film, like, you know, you shouldn't have taken, I wasn't at practice, but if he were to run, he's going to look back at film with Scangarello and say, man, I could have had an easy first down or a touchdown or something to move the chains instead of taking a, you know, 4 yard gain and possibly gotten hit. And that's all a learning process. That's why I don't think Jason Lecanfor is correct in thinking that Drew Lock is or Joe Flacco will be replaced at some time during 2019, provided the fact that Joe Flacco is healthy. I think Joe Flacco just gives this team
right
the best chance to win. Look, when Emmanuel Sanders' contract's up and Derek Wolfe's contract's up and Chris Harris's contract's up and you don't have to, you know, there's no money due to Joe Flacco, it's 2019 is the year to start winning again. So Joe Flacco to me for 2019 is the by far and away your best option. Because he has that experience. Yeah, he might not. He's never been athletic. Do you remember all his slides when he's a Raven and when he had that bulky knee brace on? Yep. And he'd take these awkward slides. I mean, he's just not smooth like that. So, yeah, he's 34. And he talked about his age and how it doesn't mean a whole lot if you're still healthy. I mean, guys age differently than other guys. 34 for one guy might be really old. 34 for some guy might be young. But I just don't think at 34 we're losing a whole lot of Joe Flacco's athleticism because he's not athletic to start with. It's the reason Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Philip Rivers and Roethlisberger, it's the reason why those guys are still playing because they were never mobile to start with. As long as they still have the arm strength, or at least somewhat the arm strength, they're good because they're so much more experienced and they can find the third, fourth option in his progression. Because he's seen it all. Joe Flacco has seen it all. He's seen every defense. And he's worked with, if Emmanuel Sanders is healthy and Cortland Sutton can take that next step as a pro, he's going to have some of the best receivers he's ever had. Now, he's played with good receivers, but they've been at the tail end of their careers, the Steve Smiths.
And Quan Bolden.
Quan Bolden. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is tail end of their career type guys.
Right. So when Jason Lecanfora bags on Joe Flacco and seems to be personal, the first thing I thought besides of it's Lecanfora, I also thought he's had dog trash receivers. I got to clean it up, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Joe Flacco has had trash, garbage receivers. Now, he's had some good receivers at the end of the year.
He had Todd Heap for a while.
Yeah. I mean, some guys here and there, but he's throwing to Mike Wallace and Chris Moore. Willie Snead? Like, come on now. Come on. Look what he's going to throw to in Denver.
Snead pretty decent with New Orleans?
He was, and he did exactly nothing right with Baltimore.
Right. That's basically his Joe Flacco's career of receivers is guys after they've
right.
had great careers.
Mike Wallace, they go to, same thing.
Yeah.
Go to Baltimore.
I think that was just to make Pittsburgh weaker. Didn't they sign him from Pittsburgh at the time?
Wallace has bounced around between them. Remember, he was with Miami? Got like that ridiculous
that's
contract,
right.
like
that's
$15
right.
million.
That's
year.
Where he left Pittsburgh from.
Mm-hmm. And Jason Lecanfora calls Flacco the.
I
most
had him
overpaid.
On my fantasy team
when he was with Miami.
Well, he got all that money. I figured, you know, you get all that money, you're gonna get the ball thrown to you.
Right.
Didn't help.
I didn't tell you to draft him, did I?
No.
Okay. Good.
I overthought that one.
Well, I may tell you to draft Royce Freeman this year, and we'll tell you why next.
You're listening to The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
So Lammy sitting in for D-Mac today, and Philip Lindsay still is limited. Tommy, we had the... Richie, did we ever find out if it's DEFCON 1 or DEFCON 5?
DEFCON 1 is the most serious.
Okay.
DEFCON 5 is...
Yeah, Tom I knew Nalen it was like was backwards right. what I would think.
Okay.
So that's why I went 1 is more serious.
Okay, so you were at DEFCON 2 when it comes to Garrett Bowles.
Yes.
And everything that we've seen from him over 3 weeks of OTAs and then one day so far of mandatory minicamp, Philip Lindsay is still limited. He was out there, he ran the ropes, no brace on that I could see.
Braceless.
And carrying the ball in his right hand, something that we hadn't seen him really do. Now he's still not taking handoffs, still not catching passes, doesn't do anything outside of the rope drill and stretching. So DEFCON 1 being the most severe, 5 the least severe, where are you at in terms of concern with Philip Lindsay still limited on the first day of mandatory minicamp.
Keep in mind, real quick, there has never, to my knowledge, been a historical situation where we've been at DEFCON 1. So that would be, like, really serious.
Right.
Really?
That's what I mean with Garrett Bowles was, if we reach DEFCON 1, there's nothing we can do, and he's released.
That's more than Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right. There's nothing left.
Look at Richie breaking off that
already,
history.
We've already evacuated.
We're done.
By two. One, we're toast. Philip Lindsay.
Yes.
Five. If I had to put...
Five?
Yeah.
You have almost zero... We're well, like we're in DEFCON 5 right
if
now.
You're saying DEFCON 5, that's something.
That's still a DEFCON. Is there such a thing as no DEFCON?
Yeah. It's called no DEFCON.
Really?
You don't even mention it.
No way.
Yeah.
I thought we were in a state of DEFCON 5 like all the time.
Well, now we are. But growing up, there was no DEFCON.
Oh, okay. Well, that's different. We're old.
But, it was a simpler time back then.
It was a simpler time. But for your concern, it's seriously at five?
Five.
You're barely concerned at all with Philip Lindsay.
Barely.
His fingers touched his forearm. They bent backwards and touched his forearm.
Yeah, and he got it all fixed.
He had wrist surgery. Was supposed to be a 4 to 6 month recovery. We're past the 6 month mark now. And you are not concerned.
We're not.
It's June, bro.
Yeah, but the beginning of June. It's only 5 months. Didn't he do it the last... Did he have...
He missed the last game. He had surgery in late December, I believe. I can look it up to be exact.
I thought he waited a little bit to have surgery.
Why would you wait with that injury?
Oh, you wait for
you wanted the swelling
to go down. It's
okay.
Probably more confusing for doctors to work. I'm not Jeff Bridish, but, you know, I don't know much about surgery, but you'd assume that with less... swelling, it would be easier to kind of figure things out inside there.
Right.
I'm just guessing. Because I waited with my ACL for a couple weeks.
Okay, and back on the 26th
of December. The last game of the year was the 31st.
Yeah, the 26th of December, right, so looking at the news, is when
we got three more weeks.
He confirmed Lindsay will undergo wrist surgery.
Will undergo. So he hadn't had it yet.
Yes.
Oh, we got plenty of time. Take him off DEFCON.
Zero DEFCON.
Zero.
We're going back to the 80s. Damn.
I know that dude. That dude at South, when he tore his ACL, his senior year, he played a couple games. He didn't know he had a torn ACL at that point. So I'm not worried about Philip Lindsay. That dude is tougher than, I would say there's no one tougher than him on the team. As far as pain and all that, and throwing the love of the game that he has, zero. I'm not on DEFCON anymore. Now that he's braceless, he had the brace on last week.
New offense.
He's learning through osmosis. Osmosis.
Okay. Probably not doing a lot of weightlifting with a wrist surgery, I would imagine.
On one side.
Right.
Probably yoked up on one side. His left.
Left arms, like, huge, and right arms.
Yeah.
Dystrophy. I lift things up and put them down.
That's what he's doing. So you've got zero concern whatsoever.
You've seen Family Guy with Quagmire when he finds out there's internet. His one side, his one arm is massive. I'm not concerned. He'll be fine. There's not much... You talk about the weight room. I don't remember, outside of Michael Pittman, many weight room heroes from the running back position.
Michael Pittman was a freak.
A freak. His locker was right next to me.
What if we get to the start of training camp on July 18th and Philip Lindsay is still limited? Will you be at DEFCON then?
If they put him on PUP?
No. They can... He could be limited. I don't think he's going to be on PUP at the start of training camp.
Okay.
I just think they might, like, ease him back in. Are you okay with that?
Yeah. He'd be in the same class as Emmanuel Sanders at that point. I assume that Emmanuel Sanders will be limited to start training camp. Again, we have an extra week.
Right.
The DEFCON could move up to 4 or 5 if after... Who do they play after... They play in Atlanta that first game? That Hall of Fame game?
Yeah.
If he's still limited going into the second week after the Atlanta game, then I'll start to get more concerned. Because then you're right. Then he's the reps through osmosis. those only can take you so far. You have to take real reps at some point with a new offense.
Science. It is science. How does it impact Philip Lindsay to know this? Royce Freeman looks outstanding, bro. I mean, outstanding. There was a play today. I can't give away too much. But you know this as a zone blocker. The running back can do three things when he gets the ball. This is what I say, scouting term. Bend, bang, or bounce. You have a choice when you get the ball in a zone system. You can bend, bang, or bounce. Well, Royce Freeman on this one play bent back opposite play side for a big score. And it was beautiful. Burst. And you can't tackle him, whatever. But it was like the lane was there. The cutback was there.
Who was the defensive end there?
Would have been...
Marcus Walker?
No. It would have been Wolfie's side, I think.
Oh, it was against the ones.
I think. Yeah.
The run was intended...
Yeah, Royce Freeman goes with the ones.
The one defense, though.
Yeah, he went against the ones. And it was this big play, and it was phenomenal. It was your style of blocking. It was your guy's right. Offense.
See, that cutback is the hardest to get a running back to believe in. Because in Alex Gibbs used to say this. He goes, it's not cutting back. It's you're still hitting where to the left intended left and then cut back right or right
yes.
left.
Yes.
So the play was probably a five hole type play, but because everyone has gone so far left, the five hole is still there. It's just teaching these guys to have them believe in the fact that the backside is an option for you guys. And until you do it and have success at it, you're never going to believe it. But Philip Lindsay's watching that going, and I've seen Philip Lindsay cut back at CU and South. This is how he runs.
Yeah, Lindsay can fit in any system, but my point is about Royce Freeman looking phenomenal. This system is perfect for him. Last year, patience, footwork, timing, these were all an issue for Royce Freeman. Those issues are gone. He looks like the back Denver thought he was going to be when they got him in the third round.
Was he untouched?
Yeah.
Like, no linebacker, and nobody.
It isn't because they can't tackle him. It was like, he saw it, he bent it.
So that's a massive hole
and
backside.
It was score.
With Juwan James
Six
back
points.
There. Ron Leary.
Broncos. Touchdown. It was huge, man. And that's something like Booker can't do that. Lindsay can. But my point is, like, okay, you're at no DEF CON for Philip Lindsay. And I'm saying,
well, yeah,
Royce Freeman looks really good.
But I'm saying from a standpoint of his health, is he going to be ready to go for the season? That's my – I assume that's where we get the rating from DEF CON is
– What about DEF CON for snaps or for touches or just your role this year? Royce Freeman looks like the real deal.
Royce Freeman was the starter for half the season last year. No, that's not the way the carries came down, but Philip only became the starter halfway through because you couldn't not have him the starter anymore. It didn't make any sense. He was the better back. But in reality, Royce Freeman was a fourth-round pick, third or fourth?
Third.
In reality, shouldn't he be the better back with Philip Lindsay as an undrafted free agent? You'd think that Royce Freeman should be the better one.
Right.
But Philip Lindsay can run in any offense.
Yes.
I'm not worried about
1,000%.
That. Just because this offense fits Royce Freeman more, it doesn't mean Philip can't run it.
Royce Freeman looked good as a receiver today,
But we
too.
Need two. You need two running backs in the
NFL.
You
guys didn't need two.
We did. Terrell got tired sometimes.
Terrell Derek got the fourth quarter off.
Derek LaVille. Would have to come in.
How many yards would have Terrell Davis had you not rested him?
2,400.
I was going to say 26, but yeah. Freeman's more than just a give him a breather back, though. And it's a good problem to have, but Tommy, I'm here to tell you it's a problem.
How is it a problem?
Because you have two really good backs and only one can get the ball.
But you said it's a good problem. That's a problem I'd like to have.
Well, it's a problem the Broncos definitely have.
That's not a problem. A good problem is not a problem at all.
A good problem is still a problem.
No, it's not. It's the NFL. It's 2019. What are you going to get? Hurt feelings because that guy got 15 carries, you only got 8? Look, if we're running 23 times, we're not probably winning the game anyways, but you'd expect 70 plays, a good balance of 35 carries between the two of them, 20 and 15, however it comes down, something like that. Is Royce Freeman getting 25 out of the 35? 25 and 10? No, Phillip ain't going to let that happen.
KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. This song's about when Nikki Sixx overdosed and had to get the adrenaline pumped in his heart. Kickstart my heart. 5 o'clock, Denver, what's up? The Drive, Tom Nalen, Cecil Lammy.
Nikki Sixx did drugs? What?
Shocking.
Breaking news.
Did you watch The Dirt?
No, my son told me to watch it, though.
Oh, you have to watch it.
My son, who was born in 1999, said, you got to watch it. I was like, what? There's a documentary on the crew?
Yeah, it's not very accurate.
Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah.
So it's not a documentary.
Well, they had to put the movie spin on it.
That was abrupt.
Wow.
Just like that, no fade?
It just stopped. Okay. Mick Mars stopped playing guitar. Anyway, we're talking about Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, and just kind of what's been going on out at OTAs. I think a good problem's still a problem. These guys aren't going to get mad because
they're the same.
Philip Lindsay's not going to get mad if Royce Freeman gets more touches. He's not going to get mad. The guy's mad because he can't even take a handoff yet. Watch Philip Lindsay at practice.
He's
walks around. He's chomping at the bit. He wants to go, man.
First of all, they're from the same draft year, and they're probably pretty friendly off the field.
Royce has said as much. So has Philip. Yeah.
I think it will be a friendly competition, and this is a good thing. I don't see a problem at all. You say a good problem is still a problem, but a friendly competition between two young backs, it's a good thing because I don't think there's going to be hurt feelings over accolade. You know, look at how you're talking about Royce Freeman, who went to the Pro Bowl last year.
Philip Lindsay.
Don't you think that had a good effect on Royce Freeman?
I would say a fire has been lit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not only did I, by the end of the year, get beat out by the guy that was undrafted, but he went to the Pro Bowl. I'm bringing it this year. And it could go back and forth.
I hate the whole hot-hand approach, though.
You want guys fighting for carries.
You want a decisive guy. You want a guy to go to, and the other guy can be pretty good. But you want a guy. What I don't want to happen, and here's what I'm afraid is going to happen, is they'll go hot hand approach. And every week it'll be different based on their opponent and all that.
Nah, there's no. You think there's a hot hand approach?
They did that in San Francisco where Rich Scangarello. You call him Scange?
Scangarello?
Is it Scang or Scang? Scange.
Scangarello?
Scangarello.
Is he Italian?
Okay.
Scangarello.
Richie, our resident Italian, chiming in. Scangarello. Scangarello came from San Francisco, where guess what they do? Matt Breida, Matthew Days.
Oh, they had
Jerick McKinnon.
They were in the Pro Bowl. These guys were in the Pro Bowl?
No.
Oh. Well, he's got a Pro Bowl running back. So he's going to figure out a way.
Lindsay's the bell cow.
Yes.
What is Freeman then?
The bell cow number two.
You can't have two cows.
You're basing this all off of his vision and the fact that he cut back untouched for a touchdown. But
right. But it's been a month. But, he's showed well for over a month.
But you said that there's three things you can do.
Bend,
you can
bang, bounce.
How's his bounce? How's Philip Lindsay's bounce?
Very good.
Okay. So couldn't you, now teams would catch on to it, but if Royce Freeman's in the game, you're more apt to. What's the
bend,
third one?
Bang or bounce?
Bang. Bang.
Bang between the tackles. Bend opposite play side. Bang or
bend.
Outside.
Bang or bend.
That's Freeman.
Well, Philip Lindsay bounces back too, though. Philip does it all. He bounces, he bends, and he bangs. He does.
For a little guy, too.
Yes.
I mean, he has no problem running inside.
He invites it. It's his style.
He loves
it. You got to throw his weight out because he does not run like that. He's never run like that. You got to watch his games at CU. He loved getting hit. He would bounce up with his hair out and just chirp the other dude that just lit him up. He loved it.
Should he maybe love it a little less?
If he gets better blocking, you won't have to do that.
All I'm saying is, and I don't want him to be Franco Harris or Sean Alexander, where anytime he gets in the open field, he's looking for the sideline, right? But I don't need him to be Walter Payton.
No.
He's not built like that. Not that Payton was a huge back, but at the time, you know, a 210-pound back, like Payton never ran out of bounds.
Right. No, Philip Lindsay is not turning anything down on the sideline.
Should he, though?
No.
Should he start looking to run out of bounds and take a few less hits?
How are you going to tell someone like that? How are you going to tell a player like that?
You can't, but he should. Shouldn't he? Shouldn't longevity be something you go, Philip, we love you. We don't want to lose you because you won't back down.
All right. So Philip Lindsay bounces it outside. He's got a 9-yard gain. He has the possibility of gaining 3 more yards if he stays in bounds and takes on, and you know, his momentum would get him a couple more yards.
Right.
So in the back of his mind, as he gets around the corner and he's gained 9 yards, he's thinking, longevity, I should think about my career here.
Or take on Derwin James, who's lining him up. You tell me.
He's taking him up. I'm just telling you. The dude isn't turning anything down.
But
I've never seen it.
Of course he's not going to, but should he?
For longevity?
Yeah.
I guess. What happens if he just is satisfied with the 9-yard gain, steps out of bounds? It's now 3rd and 1. They get stuffed on 3rd down, and they have to punt. As opposed to, and how's that going to look on film the next day to his teammates? He stepped out of bounds to preserve his career as opposed to preserving a drive. Yeah, long term, it sounds great. But in week 4, when you're looking at that film going, man, Phillip's changed.
I don't want him to change that much. I want him to still run with that heart, that determination, that fire. But
that's what
that
got
energy.
Him there. That's why he's so special.
Can he survive that way? Ward Dunn played 12 years in the league.
His wrist injury had nothing to do with that. It's just things happen. Ward Dunn was a dancer. He never got hit. Barry Sanders never got hit.
Yeah. Ward Dunn played 12 years.
The dude never got hit.
11 years over 1,000 all-purpose yards for Warwick Dunn.
Who did they give the ball to when they really needed to grind it out, though?
Allstott. They gave it to Mike Allstott.
Right. They didn't care about his career.
So Royce Freeman's more than Mike Allstott, though, all due respect to Mike Allstott.
No, he's much. But if you're talking about his longevity, wouldn't a shared load, not the hot hand, but a shared carry load, wouldn't that make better sense?
Yes.
For the team?
You're managing Phillip's time.
Right.
If it's 3rd and 1, put in Freeman. As much as Phillip could get it and could get skinny and do all those things that he does between the tackles, on 3rd and 1, you need the banger. I'm just going to give it to Royce Freeman. He's 230 pounds.
I'm running play action. Fant. Seam.
He had a big play today. Again, you can't talk about where it was or what he did.
He had a big play.
Noah Fant had a big touchdown catch from Joe Flacco.
A touchdown.
Today. Mm-hmm.
That is a big play.
Deep one. Big. Almost exactly as you're describing it. So just people should be excited about this Broncos offense. That's all I'm saying. You got some nice pieces.
The problem with the people is that they feel like they've heard this story too many times
before.
Do they
feel like this offense is outdated? Do you get offended when people are like, oh, this offense stuck in the 90s?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's probably older than the 90s. It's more a San Francisco in the late 80s.
Yeah, it's an 80s offense.
So
you gotta keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
But the 3-4 defense was outdated And only, I think only Pittsburgh was running the 3-4 at one time.
Yeah, they were the only team at one
time.
And
you know how hard it was to block the 3-4 because nobody did it? It was weird. So if the Denver Broncos are running the only offense and everybody else is getting used to the Cardinals offense or whoever, then wouldn't you think that's an advantage? Yeah, it might not be exciting at times, but a 3rd-and-1 play action, 30-yard touchdown down the middle with your number one draft pick is pretty damn exciting.
It is. It is.
You might not like the 2 4- and 5-yard runs to get the 3rd-and-1. You think that's boring. 9 yards in a cloud of dust. But the payoff for doing that is play action. And that's what Joe Flacco does best.
True play action, not bootleg.
Hmm.
He's a play action, true drop back.
Play action. Although, yes. Von Miller was talking, was it Von talking about his, he referenced a play in particular today at practice where Joe Flacco booted right.
Yep.
And threw from his own 20 to the opposing 15, which is
on the left.
Like, what's that, 65 yards?
Yes.
To the, across his body.
Yes.
So don't sleep on
65 yards across the 52-yard wide field.
The team, I say we, the offense needs to run some sort of boot because what it does is with that cutback, it keeps that end that's unblocked. It keeps him honest. You got to at least
keeps him home.
It keeps him home. It keeps him. He's got his responsibility in reality is Joe Flacco or anything that comes out that side. So it does allow for when that end holds for the fake boot, it allows for that cutback. They all go together. But if people think this is an old offense and nobody does it anymore, you got to think, well, if nobody's doing it, no one's practicing against it. So every week they play the Denver Broncos, they're going to be confused throughout the practice week because it's not the offenses that they're accustomed to seeing. I mean, it took the Denver Broncos a whole half to figure out in this offense how to cover a tight end. Now, they did a great job in the second half, but the damage was done.
Yeah, and Kyle Shanahan forgot that George Kittle was that close to the record. Although I think Kittle had 2 targets after half.
He had a chance to break it.
Yeah, he did. But the 2 targets were incomplete. And then they just kind of didn't go back to him.
But yeah, it doesn't. My feelings do not get hurt that people say this is an old offense. It was just that by the end of my career, no, I wouldn't say the end of my career, but somewhere probably in the early 2000s, a lot of teams were running it. That style of offense. So everybody was kind of used to it. It took a while for teams to catch up to it and how to defend it and all. But once your team is running it throughout training camp, you know how to defend it because of training camp. You see it all the time.
I say this or I ask this, don't take offense. So don't throw your spittoon at me or your hot coffee at me. How much better would this Broncos offensive line be if they allowed cut blocking like they did in the day?
See, the
because you played about half and half, right? When they changed the rules, you got to cut block and then you didn't get
to cut block.
There
was some modified. The only cut block that happens in this offense or would have happened in this offense is backside, whether it was the nose guard who was shaded backside or the 3 technique who was backside of the play. Those were the only 2 guys that were, and it was only one of the guys who would get cut blocked because you can't cut block both of them because you don't have enough people. So Juwan James is, if anything, he's getting that money because he's athletic. It's not because he's his physical right tackle. That's not him.
No.
If people are expecting a John Runyon out there or Lane Johnson out there, that's not who Juwan James is. It's his ability to be athletic, and he's perfect. And Garrett Bowles is too. Perfect for that backside cutoff where the chop block is not allowed anymore, but they're quick enough where they can get their head across the 3 technique. That's what it's all about, is just getting your head across. I mean, that's what we'd practice. You wouldn't cut block in practice, but to make the game, make the play go. I mean, Matt Lepsis was fantastic. Tony Jones was. They were fantastic at during practice taking the right steps, anticipating the cadence, and flying over there, almost like they were pulling to cut off that 3 technique to get that lane, that backside cut
mm-hmm.
or bend.
I like it. Bend, bang, or bounce. Rice Freeman's been doing a good job of it in practice, and we'll eventually see Philip Lindsay.
TD could do all three of those.
TD could do everything.
I think he preferred to bang or bend than bounce, but
yes.
It didn't matter.
He wasn't much of a bouncer.
He didn't really have to. It was a threat of the bounce, and that gets the linebackers running. And as soon as you get the linebackers running, there's your bend right there. It's the threat of the bounce. Philip Lindsay made so many yards off of a designed cutback play, but it's all predicated on getting the flow of the linebackers.
Everyone sees his frame and thinks he's a bounce guy.
Yeah.
You see a little guy, Devontae Jackson, their undrafted running back. All he does is bounce it outside. That doesn't work, bro.
You know who else saw that frame? All the NFL scouts, the NFL teams,
right.
Which is why they passed on him. They didn't truly watch because so much is about the combine and he wasn't even invited to the combine?
No, he was not. He was at the Shrine game and where I was were in Tampa and scouts were calling him James White. I was shocked he didn't get a combine invite. I think it's disgusting that he wasn't. Other players have not been invited but
the combine would have been, well, it can't be worse because he didn't get drafted, but it would not have helped him because he's not blazing fast and the combine is basically you're up there at the weigh-in with underwear on or shorts, and that is not going to do much for Philip Lindsay. The problem is they missed the last 3 years of his college career. They didn't see him as a sophomore when he was probably about .165, 170, and running the same way as he did as a senior. They just looked at his numbers and looked at his 40 times and his weight and just made this decision that he's not physical. He won't be. His size won't translate well to the NFL. But the guys in college, I mean, the Devons, they're 6 foot, 240. They played college football. That's what they're going to be as pros. They're not going to get any bigger. They're going to be 6 foot, 240.
Right.
Or Devons 5'11, 240, whatever they are. And he was playing against large human beings in college. He wasn't outrunning anyone. He was running dudes over. I love watching him play. I'm very pro Philip Lindsay.
It's fun to watch Philip Lindsay play.
But he ran the same way in high school. He's the same player. He was about 150 in high school and would cramp up in the third quarter because he played every position. But whether it was him carrying the ball or him lead blocking, he loved to play fullback. Loved it. He would knock. He loved hitting people.
Somebody should have talked to you before Philip Lindsay came up because he would have been drafted.
How do they not know that, though? The NFL with all their scouting departments, how do you miss on like a Tony Romo? Like, it's weird to me. They put so much time and effort into evaluating all these players.
This is where
I can understand Rod Smith, who was 1994. He was a quarterback in college.
Right, right.
So,
Julian Edelman, who was a quarterback in college, right. Like stuff like that. But here's where analytics, that's the downside of it, is you're going to look at 5'7", 180 pounds and go, he'll never make it.
Right.
Not watching a down one of them.
Well, because you just look at the numbers and you don't even turn the film on.
Yeah. I played in the Pac-12. Yeah, not a lot of great defenses.
It's true. The Pac-12 does not help because it's a lot of the offenses are different, and the defense right. is different, and right. everyone thinks Chip Kelly's still coaching at Oregon.
But remember when the Big 12 was seen as, like, a laughingstock, and now everyone's like, can I get a Big 12 quarterback, please?
Well, yeah, because they're putting up 50 points a game.
Right.
People aren't saying, oh, the Big 12's bad at defense. They go, no, the offense is just that good.
It's different now.
It's different. It's hard, too, because you're in love with the Alabama run with Jacobs for the Raiders.
Jacobs, yeah.
But I'm thinking, well, he played at Alabama, so how good can he? It's hard to figure out if he's that good because of the talent that surrounded him, his offensive line. It's hard. How good's Kyler Murray when he had, I think, 4 out of the 5 offensive linemen were drafted?
You're right.
I mean, he was playing with an NFL team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to figure out how good these guys really
are. But Alabama's not going to promote a slappy. I mean, you look at their history of running backs as well. Derrick Henry, Mark Ingram, et cetera. Like,
Mark Ingram, he doesn't do it for me. Never has. I think he's been a bust. I don't think he's been that great of a player.
It took him 6 years to get a 1,000-yard season.
A Heisman Trophy winner, a first-round pick. You'd expect more out of that. We got more out of Philip Lindsay as an undrafted in his rookie year
than you did Mark Ingram as a Heisman Trophy winner,
because
first-round pick.
Philip Lindsay did not have the blocking that Mark Ingram ever had. I mean, he had to make a lot of those yards by Philip Lindsay.
Those are Philip Lindsay yards.
It's not first down CU. It's first down Philip Lindsay.
Well, you're not lying. I just think that you can't have Royce Freeman sitting on the bench. You got to use them both.
I agree.
You got to use them both.
This is going to be a more balanced team. So you're going to have, I assume the defenses get, they're not going to have to throw the ball consistently, you know, 40 plus times a game. So you're going to have a balance to the offense. And Philip Lindsay is not, he'll wear down with 35 carries a game. So you're going to need some sort of balance.
Right, right.
And I don't think that's going with a hot hand. I don't think it's a, you started off with saying it's a running back problem. I don't think it's a problem at all. I think it's going to be a healthy competition between two friends, and they're still going to get theirs.
What about
Devontae Booker?
Oh, well.
Scraps. He's just getting scraps.
I don't know if he makes the team. He probably does last year of his contract, but I'm not going to call Devontae Booker a lock for the 53-man roster. I'm going to call Drew Lock a lock for the 53-man roster. I'm also going to call out, and I wish I should have written it down, but it was either Ryan O'Halloran texted me who it was because we were talking about it. It was either Malik Reed or Aaron Wallace that knocked Drew Lock down today in practice. Don't touch the quarterback. Right?
Right.
What happens in your practices when the quarterback gets touched?
Well, there's two things. The quarterback coach will yell at the whoever hit the quarterback.
Right.
And maybe some of the other coaches, offensive coordinators, they'll be yelling by those particular. The offensive line coach will be yelling at whoever allowed that to happen, and the defensive coaches will be patting the dude in the butt. That's exactly what happens.
That's what happens.
Yes.
Even though you're not supposed to hit the quarterback.
They might feign anger, the defensive coaches, maybe on the field just to be PC.
Right.
But I don't think they look at that as a bad thing.
Okay. All right. Well, things getting a little physical out there at mandatory minicamp, and Drew Lock did get knocked to the ground one time. Got right
Popped
back
right
up.
Right back up.
Yeah, guy helped him up. I can't remember who it was.
He's a big dude. He played in the SEC. Yeah. He's been
fine.
With the team he played with when they played the big boys. Yeah, he got hit a lot. Or he ran.
Because he can't.
Or he ran and got hit.
Were you surprised that Fangio, Mr. Doesn't compliment anybody, was actually quite complimentary of Drew Lock today?
Well, he was asked about Drew Lock and how is he progressing. Mm-hmm. It would be breaking news if he said he's terrible, he's way behind,
but he
thought he was going to be better.
Like he answered Noah Fant when he's talking about going to Home Depot. You know, like Noah Fant's got a lot of tools, but it doesn't mean you're a carpenter. I can go to Home Depot. Like that answer, he could have given that answer about Drew Lock. Because he gave that Home Depot answer, I guess that's what we'll call it, right?
Okay.
He could have given him the Home Depot answer about Drew Lock. Well, he's got a lot of tools.
You're thinking of any position but quarterback. Quarterback, you have to be careful about how you talk about him to the media. You can take him aside and tell him, Drew, you're playing like crap, but I don't think you throw, especially a young quarterback, I think you need to be careful about how you assess him in front of the media.
Why?
Because they can be fragile. I mean, they're on an island. They're the quarterback. It's completely different. It's completely different than any other position on the team. Maybe kicker. I think kicker could kind of fall into that same category where you have to be careful about their psyche. You don't want to wreck Drew Lock in the first month. So if you're going to be asked about him, I would err on the side of caution and praise him or say good things about him.
It was legitimate praise, though. I don't think he was just glossing over like, he's great. I think he just said he's coming along slowly because that's the natural progression
you
would make.
Right. So he's being honest, but he's not throwing him on the bus either. He's nowhere near being ready to play 2019. He's running with the threes, and that's probably where he'll be. He's not going to say that.
The biggest problem with Drew Lock actually has nothing to do with him? Tommy's answer to my interesting question next.